It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith, and I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up show, BFW's weekly hitter, where we catch all of the latest and greatest news. Man, another crazy week for Bayern Munich and the German national team, and let's just get right into it, because yesterday, on Wednesday at this time, I was just about ready to record the preview show ahead of Germany's international friendly versus France. Did all of my research, checked out the latest injury reports, put together the preview, released it, and literally within a half an hour, we find out that Manuel Neuer has an adductor issue and has left Germany's camp. We would later find out that it was a little more serious than was previously indicated. It was first described as a minor injury. Now we're hearing it's something that could keep him out for a couple of weeks, perhaps potentially. Now, we don't know anything for sure. Potentially could be something that could affect him for Bayern Munich's Champions League tie against Arsenal. We'll see when we get some official word on all of that. But man, what a bad stroke of luck for Manuel Neuer. What a terrible thing for Bayern Munich. What can you say? I mean, it's a really tough spot. In a season where a whole hell of a lot of things have went wrong, they continue to go downhill even when you think Bayern Munich has turned the corner and has started to play better. Man, I was really digging the way that they were playing, how they had picked each other up, and how they had really fought to turn the season around. And as we've said a million times, I know it wasn't against the highest level of competition, but they had turned that corner, and now really they could only climb back up. I mean, they are out of the Bundesliga race. No one is really expecting them to make much more noise in the Champions League, given the fact that they're drawn against Arsenal. And even if they get by Arsenal, they have to play the winner of Real Madrid and Man City. In a lot of different ways, all of the expectations, all of the weight from those expectations has been taken off of Bayern Munich's shoulders. So now we were going to get a chance to see them play unencumbered. You didn't have to worry about players feuding with Tuchel because Tuchel's on his way out the door. So everything that had held Bayern Munich back to this point was seemingly going away. There were no expectations, and the players could just move on and play freely without worrying if Tuchel was going to have some kind of issue with them. Now, you throw Neuer's injury into the mix, and then you add in a lesser important injury to Sacha Boué, who is just I had another case of just a guy that's had terrible luck. You would think, given the fact he was brought over from Galatasaray to come in and provide depth at right back and perhaps even pick up some important minutes, given the injuries that Bayern Munich had at the spot, Boué has just had, I mean, it's been bad in terms of injuries. So we don't even really know what it will be like and how he'll play and where he might even fit, if at all, next season, because he's just been so injury riddled since he's arrived in Munich. And what an unfortunate turn of events for him and for Bayern Munich alike. It's just one of those periods where we've seen them before, where Bayern Munich gets hit with bad news, piece of bad news after another piece of bad news. And I will tell you, it was very frustrating on a lot of levels to see that Neuer went out. And you know, there are a lot of thoughts about this. I mean, is it that he's just getting older and he can't handle the schedule? I mean, I would tend to believe that this injury was probably something that could have happened at either camp, whether it was at Bayern Munich or with Germany. But you never know. Different training styles, different ideas on, you know, preparation. We don't know how that all affected Neuer. But either way, I'm sure everyone is hoping that he gets back. It seems like that would be a pretty tough injury to work through for a goalkeeper, knowing that part of the body and how they need to use it basically in everything that they do. So hopefully Neuer is able to get a quick recovery and is able to help Bayern Munich as it prepares to face Arsenal. It would really be a shame if he was not able to play in the Champions League tie, but that's getting way ahead of ourselves. We don't know exactly how this all looks. What we do know is that he was back at Sabnerstrasse and he was getting treated this morning. As far as Sacha Boué goes, we know that he's out for about 6 weeks per build. So just a really, really tough situation for everyone involved there, especially Neuer. It was really unfortunate to see that. Now, I was disappointed just because I feel like he's had such a good season and he's put in the time and he battled back from that, you know, really heinous broken leg injury that he had. And quite frankly, he's been one of the best goalkeepers in the world again. So, it is a really, really tough spot for Bayern Munich, really tough spot for him. And we know that Sven Ulreich can step up to the plate. I mean, we've seen some great performances by him. We've seen some not so great in the past. We'll see what Sven Ulreich shows up to play when Bayern Munich resumes, assuming that Neuer will not be available. Another player that was kind of felled by the injury bug at the German camp was Jan-Nicklas Best from Heidenheim, who, wow, again, you talk about a guy at 25, a winger who had not gotten the opportunity to play for the national team before. To have this kind of luck, it's really a shame. I felt the same way about Alexander Pavlovich. You know, he had that sickness come through, and you feel for these guys who it's their first opportunity to do something at this level for a national team. Sure. I mean, it sucks for anybody involved to get hurt or have something happen in training where they can't compete. But for those two, it was really, in my mind, disappointing because of the situation for them. I mean, at any point, did anyone think that Jan-Nicklas Best would have been a player who was on Germany's radar at the beginning of the season? I certainly would not have. So it was very disappointing for him. And, you know, as we see how this German camp plays out, these injuries are definitely setting the tone for how Julian Nagelsmann is going to set up his team, not just this weekend, but ahead of the Euros. You know, the latest reports indicate that Nagelsmann wants to really set the team up and have his starting 11 for the Euros nailed down by the end of these two games. I don't know if he can do it. The latest report from Bild indicates that he's got a couple of positions that he's still working through. And we'll give you that predicted starting 11, which differs a little bit from the one that I put on our preview show. So let's just take a quick look at what Bild is saying might happen. At goalkeeper right now, it's Marc-Andre Ter Stegen. Obviously, I had predicted Neuer, but what can you say? Did not know Neuer was on the verge of getting hurt. Maybe it was me. It was probably my bad luck that cursed him. Center back tandem is pretty consistent to what I said, Antonio Rudiger and Jonathan Tah. Right back, Joshua Kimmich, I think most people were expecting it. At left back, though, it was very interesting because I expected Nagelsmann to be pretty set on Benjamin Henrichs to be the player at left back, but Maximilian Mittelstadt has been a player who has been emerging over the course of this season on the club scene, and now he's really pushing Henrichs at the German camp. So I would actually like to see what Mittelstadt can do. I think we'll see a dose of him over the course of the next couple of games because Nagelsmann's going to need to see him. He's going to need to see him against top-flight competition. If I'm Nagelsmann and I have doubts about Henrichs, I'm playing Mittelstadt this weekend against France because I want to see how he's going to handle that kind of situation against that level of competition. I mean, you know what you have in Henrichs. You do. You've seen him enough if you're Nagelsmann, but you need to see more of Mittelstadt. So that to me is a very intriguing battle. In the central midfield, Toni Kroos has one spot nailed down, but the other one is still up for grabs. And this was a position I had batted up in the air too, because we have Robert Andrich, who has had just a really phenomenal season, and Pascal Gross, who is already been with Germany for a couple of shifts and now has, again, another guy that's put in a solid club season, has really staked a claim to that spot. But you have Andrich and Gross really competing for that. And I think Nagelsmann, again, he's going to use these two games to figure out who he favors out of that duo. So, again, good competition there across the attack. Some of that is nailed down. Florian Wirtz and Jamal Musiala look like they will be playing as narrow wingers, or however you want to phrase them, wide forwards. Ilkay Gundogan seems to have nailed down the 10 spot, but the striker position is yet another spot that Nagelsmann is toying with. Niklas Füllkrug was thought to have the edge heading into these games against France and the Netherlands. But Kai Havertz, considering how he has played for Arsenal of late, has pushed himself back onto Julian Nagelsmann's radar as a potential starter. This position would differ a little bit than what he's playing at Arsenal, from what I understand. I am not an avid Arsenal watcher or supporter, but I do know that Samarin and a couple other of the BFW staffers do watch Arsenal on the regular, and they have talked a lot about how Havertz has excelled this season. And it's been in this sort of hybrid midfielder role, from what I understand. But Nagelsmann has an idea to potentially play him at striker. Füllkrug, Havertz, and in a deep competition at striker. I would go with Füllkrug right now. It's not as much a knock on Havertz as it is. I think you just need to play Füllkrug at this point. He is a capable finisher around the net, and he's dependable in that respect. I don't think he's as dynamic of a player as Havertz, and we've seen the absolute best of Havertz and the absolute worst. I think you just, for these two games, you want to get an idea of how this attack can function with Wirtz, Musiala, and Gundogan. And I think you want that dependable presence in the box, someone who's, I think, is a little bit more physical, a little stronger in the box. And I think Füllkrug is the kind of player that if Wirtz, Musiala, and Gundogan are able to provide him the opportunities and get him those chances, he'll make good on them. I think Havertz is a little bit more inconsistent with that. I don't like his movement around the box as much. Füllkrug just seems a lot more comfortable working in that area. Whereas with Havertz, I still see him as more of a 10 or a wide forward or winger. I don't see him more of as that striker that's able to play centrally and create havoc with his physicality like I think Füllkrug can. It's an interesting choice. Nagelsmann certainly has. He's got some things he's going to have to sort out. And, you know, as much as he might want to nail this down and have his starting 11 for the Euros all set up and ready to go for those final friendlies in June, I don't know if he's going to get that. I just don't know. I think there are a lot of iffy things going on right now. And some of the positions I anticipate potentially being problems, like I don't know if Gundogan's going to give you everything as a 10 that you want. I don't think he's going to be challenged, though. I think, if anything, you might get a token Thomas Muller appearance to get some minutes every now and again, but don't think you're going to see much of Muller otherwise. I'm not even so convinced that Gundogan is better than Muller at the 10 at this point, but Nagelsmann's going to make these choices. He's going to have to make the tough calls. And, you know, the way things are going, it's kind of funny because the DFB is looking at Nagelsmann and they're seeing the job that he's doing. And the most recent reports are they want to retain him. They want to make him a permanent coach of this team rather than what is essentially an interim coach, which I know technically he's not an interim guy, but I mean, it's been widely assumed that this is just a stopgap until he can get a job at a big club. And knowing Nagelsmann, he definitely has his eye on bigger things than the German national team. So I don't know if the DFB is going to necessarily be successful. They can try and court him all they want. I just don't see it at this stage. And that segues perfectly into one of the big stories of this week. And it's been something that was bandied about a little bit. And Bayern CEO Jan-Christian Driesen and Nagelsmann himself have both kind of played coy with this, saying that they have not closed the door on anything in football. So, you know, read through the lines on that is that Driesen is saying that there's an opportunity for Nagelsmann to potentially come back and coach Bayern Munich. It's very unclear just how much fun he was having with this. It could be that, you know, he's toying with the emotions of fans here one way or the other. But for Nagelsmann, he played right off of it and said that indeed, you know, you can't ever really discount anything in the world of football. So could Nagelsmann really come back to Bayern Munich? Let's examine that for a second. Nagelsmann himself probably feels like he got a raw deal toward the end of his time at Bayern Munich. And, you know, as many of us have talked about at BFW, whether you liked him or not, the timing of that sacking was just awful. It was terrible. And it didn't make sense. The team was still up for a treble. Sure, there were some signs of things not being great. Sure, Nagelsmann probably didn't think things through with his ill-timed ski trip. I mean, who are we to tell someone when to take their PTO? Certainly didn't go over well with Brazo and Oliver Kahn. But when you talk about Kahn and Brazo, they're not with the club anymore. And the, you know, listen, and we debated this in the BFW comments, depending on who and what you believe, part of the reason why Brazo and Kahn were let go is because they went rogue on this, made the decision even without the blessing of Ole Hoeneß. Now, that is a big point of contention. We'll never know the truth on that. You can only go with what Uli says, which is he had no say. And there's never really been a story saying that he has was part of that decision-making process. Even going back to when it happened, Kahn and Brazo were the two guys that were accountable for it. And when they brought on Tuchel, they left themselves no margin for error. And of course, we all know how it played out. The team didn't respond to Tuchel for obvious reasons. There was a lot of inconsistent play and they got worse. So getting worse cost those two their jobs. But they're gone. And now there's new leadership in tow. Driesen, who took over for Oliver Kahn, obviously wasn't a part of the process. Herbert Hainer, who was president at the time and still is, was there. But he also has kind of washed his hands of that decision. So from a sporting perspective, those two guys that booted Nagelsmann are gone. Now, human nature being what it is, if I'm Nagelsmann, I'm probably a little bit apprehensive about Bayern Munich and thinking I can go back there. Certainly, there's going to be a history within the locker room. Not everything was great with Nagelsmann and the players, but he did start to push those right buttons toward the end of his tenure. He started to figure it out, and there is some positives to the relationships that he has built at Bayern Munich. So realistically, could they bring him back? Sure, they could. Will they? I don't know. I don't know that Bayern Munich is ready to rewind so quickly on Nagelsmann. I wouldn't close it off completely for the future because Nagelsmann still, he's a bright guy. He's still young. He's going to prove himself at some club somewhere. I don't think he'll be sticking around with the German national team. I think he will land on his feet at some club, but I just don't know if this is the time you go back to Bayern Munich. And, you know, listen, if he goes this summer and he pushes Germany to a really strong showing at the Euros, I think Bayern will get tempted. I don't know if they would pull the trigger on it, but I think they will get tempted. However, if Nagelsmann does what his predecessor, Hansi Flick, did, which is not be able to lead Germany out of the group stage, I think Nagelsmann's reputation will take a little bit more of a hit. Now, even with the expectations being low on Germany, Nagelsmann is the guy who's expected to really push them to get the most out of this team. No one thinks that they can go in and win Euros, but they are expecting at least the team to look respectable. Can it happen? I don't know. But Bayern Munich and Nagelsmann, it's going to be an interesting little bit of history. They have what happened before. They're in the middle of this whole coaching search where Nagelsmann needs a job. Bayern Munich needs a coach. Xabi Alonso is not exactly proving to be easy to get. Antonio Conte has been the one name that has been most linked to Bayern Munich of late. Those rumors started to emerge yesterday, and now we're seeing more and more of them. It's a really weird time at Bayern Munich in terms of looking for this coach, but I don't think Nagelsmann's coming back just yet. That's just my take on the situation. I don't even know that it would be a failure. I don't know that it would be a success, but what I do know is it just seems like it's too soon. I think Nagelsmann's carrying a little bit of that weight with him from what happened. I think he probably feels a little scorned. I think even without Brazo and Kahn there, there's still got to be some ill will toward the club because, again, very similar to how some of the players probably feel about this season, it's not as if anyone jumped up that we know of to come in and save Nagelsmann and to support him. Even during the great Brazo-Flick wars, we saw defined sides. We saw Uli Hoeneß side with Brazo. We saw Karl-Heinz Rummenigge loosely side with Hansi Flick. I mean, there were, and if you look at the entire coaching staff, fully backed Flick. So clearly there was a lot going on with that. But we're not seeing that right now. We're seeing that the club is very open-minded to just about everything. Max Eberl spoke openly about the possibilities of getting certain coaches, how they've got a list in mind, how one of the names was taken off, which I think a lot of people are assuming is Sebastian Hoeneß, and probably seems true since he re-upped with VfB Stuttgart this week. It's very interesting. It's a situation where Bayern Munich is absolutely going to have to get this move right. And I think because of that, because of everything that happened with Tuchel and how everything played out with Nagelsmann at the end of his tenure, I think it's just too close in time to go back to that well, that Bayern Munich's going to need at least one coach to create that gap for Nagelsmann, to make all of those bad feelings and ill will, to make all of that go away, and for everyone involved in the situation to get a fresh start. Because even at that point, if Bayern Munich hires a new coach and he's only there for a season or two, it's enough for that roster to probably turn over to where it's almost an entirely new group for Kimmich to work. I mean, for Kimmich, wow, what a slip there. Nagelsmann to work with. So it certainly could be a situation where it's intriguing, and some people will be excited about it. Some others will be, you know, getting their torches and pitchforks and ready to storm Sabanerstrasse. But I think we'll probably see more stories on that. We'll see it be teased, but I don't think it's all that realistic. And hey, maybe I'm wrong. It's not as if I'm batting 1,000 on my predictions, but I just don't see that being a legitimate possibility as a hiring this summer. One final thought in this segment is that Germany, with Nagelsmann as their coach, has to make a statement with these two games against France and the Netherlands. And knowing what we know about Nagelsmann, that he's looking for a club job, that he's toying with Bayern Munich and all of this, when you cycle back through everything we just talked about, whether it's the injuries, the rumors of Nagelsmann and Bayern Munich and everything, the bottom line for him is that he's got to take this team. He's got to mold it into his vision and make it work the best it can over the course of these two games. It won't be easy. He's lost a couple of players who probably could have made an impact for him in Neuer and Pavlovic. We don't think that Best was going to have a significant impact, but he's gone as well. This is a time for Nagelsmann, if he really wants to go out and prove to any club out there that he is a top-notch coach, the easiest way to do that is to take this squad at Germany and turn it into a contender. Not necessarily a winner, but a team that's dangerous, a team that should be respected, and a team that when they get to the group stage will be expected to progress out of it. So Nagelsmann's got a lot going on. Certainly, there is a lot to watch with the German national team this weekend. And speaking of watching, this will be my final note for this segment. I haven't seen any way to watch this weekend's games in the United States. All I can see right now is Fubo TV. So that could affect our coverage at BFW. Did want to drop that in because that's a big source of what we do, is our game coverage. And right now it does not appear as if, in the United States anyway, we're going to have legitimate ways to watch it. So we will be tracking that, and we'll hopefully be leaning on our overseas folks who have easier access to watch the matches, and hopefully they can help carry the load through the weekend. But we will see what happens. France and Netherlands are on deck for Germany. Hopefully I get a chance to see them. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back and talk about some of the latest news with Bayern Munich in terms of players and what is dropped this week, particularly around transfer rumors. So we'll check that out when we get back. Hang with us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey, everybody, thanks for hanging in for that. Obviously, a lot to talk about with Julian Nagelsmann and the German national team. Just so much going on. But one of the biggest stories that came through about Bayern Munich this week was Max Eberl confirming that they had made essentially a best and final offer to Alphonso Davies, which would put his annual salary at 12 to 13 million. Clearly, this is a drop in what Bayern Munich was paying its top players. Left back's not exactly one of those positions that typically would warrant a massive salary. So I think given the nature of the game and what left backs are paid, this is a very generous offer from Bayern Munich. Is it good enough for Davies? You know what? I think it is good enough. The problem, though, isn't necessarily salary for Davies. I think he just genuinely wants to move to Real Madrid. So even if Real Madrid doesn't top that offer, I think Davies just has it in his head that he wants to leave and he wants to make a change. And I don't think it's a salvageable situation for Bayern Munich. Sometimes you're in one of these player club relationships where they just grow apart. I mean, it could be any type of relationship, right? But Davies has done what he's done at Bayern Munich. He has progressed. He's developed. He's gotten to the point where he's a household name in footballing circles. For Davies, though, he also wants to be a brand. That is extremely obvious. We have talked about his focus on having this kind of brand and having the platform to have that brand many times. But to get there, he's not going to be able to do that at Bayern Munich. So to me, if Madrid even comes close to the salary, if they come in at $10 million, I think Davies is smart enough to know that the platform that Madrid is going to give him, he can make up $2 or $3 million easily just by being on Real Madrid. Whether it's endorsements, whether it's personal stuff with his YouTube channel or TikTok or anything, however he's generating money for himself, he will have greater possibility to do that at Real Madrid. And when we talk about endorsements, it's not a knock on Bayern, but the facts are the facts. Real Madrid is a brand that is more recognized globally. It has more fans globally. And whether you think those fans are plastics or not, they're buying things. And if they're buying Alphonso Davies merchandise or paraphernalia, all the better for him. So I do think that this move for him is set in stone. I don't think he's going to re-up with Bayern Munich. I also just don't think it matters what the salary they offered him was. I don't know if Real Madrid can afford or will even pay that kind of money to a left back. Why would they need to? They have options in-house right now. But if they want Davies and Davies wants them, I'm pretty sure if they get to a salary that's around $10 million per season, and that's gross. I mean, gross in terms of gross versus net, not that it's too much. I think that Davies is going to take that, and I think he'll bank on himself that he'll be able to make up any shortcoming or shortfall in the difference of salaries just by being in that platform at Real Madrid, playing in La Liga, and having all of that exposure to more fans worldwide. So Davies, I think, has his numbers in mind. I think his agent already knows what's going on. I think the only thing that could happen from this point is that if Davies truly wants to get up into that 12 to 13 million range at another club and Real Madrid won't do that, it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for Davies to kick the tires with a move to the Premier League, because he potentially could get more money than what Real Madrid could offer him or even Bayern Munich, but he would also get an even bigger platform than what Real Madrid can offer. So Davies has his possibilities. I don't think he'll be coming back to Bayern Munich, but Eberl, I think, made a pretty fair offer. I think this is for a left back at this stage of his career. 12 to 13 million per season is pretty damn good. And if Davies wants to be with Bayern Munich, and it's truly not about wanting a bigger platform or off the field type things, and he just truly is open to it, I think Bayern Munich can offer him the best package of salary and playing time that he'll get anywhere else. But I don't think it's just about the money in terms of salary for him. I think there's a bigger stake for him in this transfer game. I think he's got his eye on being a brand, and it's just really going to be tough to do that from Germany, a league that, listen, in most people's eyes, it's the third best league in Europe. In some people's eyes, it's only the fourth. Or if you're crazy, you think it's the fifth. I mean, personally, it's my top league. It's the one I watch the most. It's the one I enjoy the most. I enjoy everything about it, the atmosphere, the environment, everything. But I get it. I'm kind of a weirdo. It's probably an anomaly among a lot of fans. So if Davies decides he wants to make that bigger leap, get to that bigger platform, I don't really think it will matter if Ebro comes back and offers another million or two on top of that. It's just probably already done in terms of Davies having his mind made up. One of the other interesting rumors we saw this week was another throwback to Ronald Araujo from FC Barcelona and Bayern Munich having interest in him. One of the interesting things we saw about this is that because of the emergence of Bayern now having four center backs on its roster, all of whom seem at least capable of starting on a part-time basis. I mean, I think most people probably rate Eric Dier as their fourth best center back, but he's proven to be pretty damn good. That if Bayern is truly going to bring in Araujo, they're going to have to sell one of those top three center backs. So that would be De Ligt, Kim Min-jae, or Dayot Upamecano. Now, Upamecano has kind of fallen out of favor in some ways. If you believe the reports that we've seen, his name has been bandied about as someone who Bayern is not so sure about now, who they would be open to at least exploring a sale. Kim Min-jae seems to be pretty safe. Matthijs de Ligt, on the other hand, he's been another guy very similar to Upamecano, where there's been some reports leaked. Most of these have been tied to Tuchel, but some reports leaked that Bayern, at least whether it's Tuchel or the club itself, is not entirely happy with de Ligt, that some of the ways that he plays the game doesn't necessarily fit how they want to play. And de Ligt, for what it's worth, just like Upamecano, they're popular names. They're well-regarded. They would absolutely be able to bring in a big chunk of money via a sale, just probably not as much as most Bayern fans would think they would get back. So if Bayern Munich had to sell one of those players, who would it be? Who would you want? I mean, I am still inclined to say that de Ligt, at his best, is the best center back on this team. I think Upamecano is probably number two. I think Upamecano has had the unfortunate circumstance of just having some off moments on the biggest of stages. And unfortunately for him, that's what fans and the club remember. Kim Min-jae in his first year, I think, has been solid, but not great. Certainly, like, he is not probably thrilled with being a bench player at this point, although he seems to be having a good attitude about things. I mean, again, I always say this. You have three center backs like that. The ideal situation is to rotate them to keep them healthy and to get them so familiar with each other and so interchangeable that you can roll out whoever is in their best form at the moment for the games that you need them. Eric Dier, he's done exactly what Bayern Munich could have wanted from him. He's come in, he's performed admirably, he's been a good guy. It's a really solid foursome of center backs. I don't see the need to go out and sell even one of them to get Ronald Araujo. I'm not saying Araujo is a bad player, because he's not. He's a very good player. But why does Bayern Munich feel the need to overcomplicate this situation? If you have four good players, and you have players that seemingly are willing to work together. Now, this could all change. We could find out that Upamecano is unhappy, or that De Ligt really wants to leave, or that Kim Min-jae can't handle being a bench player, or that Dier feels like he's done enough to warrant more playing time and therefore wants to go. Any of those things could happen. But at this point, you have to say to yourself, if you're selling one of those players, do you really need to reinvest the money into a player like Araujo who is just going to come in and overcomplicate things on the back line once again? If Bayern does sell one of the center backs, I think you'd be looking more in line with getting like a veteran, someone like Dier, who is experienced, has played in the biggest moments, maybe someone a little quicker than Dier, so you have that option. But I wouldn't necessarily think you would need to go out and spend a lot of money on someone like that. Like, I don't think you need to go out and get someone who is valued as high as Araujo if you decide to sell one of De Ligt, Upamecano, or Kim Min-jae. So I see the rumors. I kind of roll my eyes at them, because I can't imagine that Max Eberl is looking at the center back situation. He's saying, you know what we need? One more body in that mix. One more good player to make this a mess for the next coach coming in. I just don't think you need it. I think if there's any position that you're set at, it's there. Now, if you want to talk about mixing things up on the wing, I'm okay with that. If you're talking about bringing in another midfielder to inject some competition into things, I'm okay with it. I think you'd have to shed somebody at that point, because I don't think Having Kimmich, Goretzka, Pavlovich, and Laimer with one more starting caliber player would work out. I think Laimer's probably going to be a one and done in Bavaria. But those are situations that will be worked out by Ebrel. One thing we know is that he is constantly assessing things. And he's been very open in terms of issuing quotes about any player that's been rumored to want to transfer out or been linked to another club. He's been open about it, and he's been talking about it. Now, he's not necessarily engaging in the rumors, but he gives you an update on where the club stands with players, how they feel about players. I think he's come in and taken that role as the face of the personnel department and really embraced it. And I think he holds a lot of respect with pundits and the media and with fans alike. So what he's saying and when he's saying it, it carries weight, and you don't just feel like you're getting, for lack of a better term, coach speak. He's seems to be genuinely telling fans, this is what's going on with certain players, just like he did with Davies. I mean, he was very blunt about it. We offered him this. We think it's a fair offer. And if he doesn't take it, you know, that's kind of out of our control. Now, I'm totally paraphrasing and not giving a direct quote there, but essentially, if you read through what he's saying, it's that they're trying. They like Davies. They want him back. They've put together the best possible offer they can give him, but now the ball's in his court. And for Davies, you know, we'll see what he does, but there are going to be several players in the mix like this. You know, and two of those guys who will probably see their names out there in the transfer rumor mill quite frequently from this point forward are Joshua Kimmich and Leon Goretzka. Now, why am I bringing those two up? Do I need to discuss all of the most recent transfer rumors with them? Probably not. I mean, if you want an update, Juventus has been scouting Leon Goretzka. He's also been linked to very loosely to some clubs looking at him from the Premier League, whereas Kimmich has seemingly legitimate interest from Real Madrid, FC Barcelona, Arsenal, Manchester City, and Liverpool. So it's not as if these two players are guys who are going to have trouble getting a job. They both have interest out there. But why I wanted to talk about them really had less to do with the transfer situation than the perception that many fans have of them. Because if you talk about two lightning rod players right now at Bayern Munich, Kimmich and Goretzka are the most lightning rod type players I think you can get when it comes to fan reaction. Fans online are directing so much hate at Kimmich and Goretzka right now. It made me wonder why. Where is all the hate coming from? Now, listen, if you want to just base how you feel about players by their performances, I get it. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong. How you assess things and how you see things, it's a personal thing. And while not everyone's going to agree on assessments or how people are analyzing these players, it's how you feel. So I'll respect that coming from anybody, but my question would be why? What's driving so much hate? Because I actually feel like it's starting to become over the top. Listen, there have been a couple of players this season that have drawn some ire. Serge Gnabry because of his inconsistency and just not meeting the level of expectation that I think a lot of people have. He had caught some heat. Leroy Sané has fallen off a cliff this season, and he is catching some heat. At different points, I mean, we've seen Matthijs de Ligt and Dia Upamecano. They've been the recipient of some fan outrage. But more than anybody, Kimmich and Goretzka have become the focal points for all of the fan ire that is out there. And I get it. There are some issues, right? Let's be honest about things. Kimmich has a very volatile personality. He can say things and act in ways that could be off-putting for some fans if he's not performing at his top level. Goretzka, similarly, he's probably got some views on things that are controversial to some fans. He's very outspoken on social issues. So there are a segment of fans who are not going to like that, the stick to sports type crowd. I get it. Like, listen, I understand why people feel that way, because sometimes people just want the release of sports and they don't want to have to deal with politics or anything else, social issues. They just want their mind to be numbed out and just watch a game and enjoy it. I actually understand that perspective and I get why people feel that way, but I don't think this season Goretzka has been over the top with any of his views or anything like that. So the heat and the hate, where is it all coming from? And all I could surmise was that people are watching the two players on the field. And because of the frustration that has mounted over the course of this season with Tuchel and how the team has played, they have become the two poster boys for what is going wrong at Bayern Munich. Because in all honesty, they were the two that were supposed to take the torch from Manuel Neuer and Thomas Müller and carry it from this point forward, be the leaders, be the integral members of the team, be the keystones that hold everything together. And because Bayern Munich has not really achieved what fans wanted them to this season, and they've quite frankly been disappointing, those two players who were supposed to be the men that were going to take this team and lead it to its next generation, because they haven't been able to rise to that level where they could carry this team and do that, I think fans are all over them. They're killing them online. It has been brutal and vicious, and it is crazy. And as I said, like, I see some of it with Sané, and I see some of it with Gnabry, but more than anyone else this season, I'm seeing Kimmich and Goretzka just getting hammered. And I'm not here to tell you how you should feel or how you should react. I'm not even going to tell you you're wrong, because in the end, we won't know how these guys performed over the course of this season until the end, till we can sit back and we can assess. I personally do not think they've been terrible this season. And I know that's not a ringing endorsement, but I think Goretzka's been pretty good, actually. I think he's gotten a little bit of a bad rap. Kimmich, I think his season started to unravel the minute Tuchel started to talk about replacing him in the public. And we've been all over this on Kimmich from the get-go. You can say what you want. You can say he's a professional, he should shake it off, it shouldn't matter to him. It does matter. It does. Because in the end, these guys are people, and I don't want to say, oh, they have feelings too. They certainly do, but they also have emotions inside them that when someone's challenging you or they're calling for your job, and to be honest, it's a very powerless position, because at that point, the way Tuchel would phrase things, there's nothing that Kimmich could have done to convince Tuchel that he was the number six, that he should be the number six. There was no other way it was going to work. There absolutely was not. So for Tuchel to do what he did, I understand how Kimmich could have become frustrated, fallen in a rut, whatever. I don't think Kimmich has handled it the best way possible. But the human element of it all makes it very difficult to say how anyone would handle that kind of situation. So you have Kimmich, you have Goretzka, and you have the fans. And if you just look, just go online, if you go on Twitter or X, whatever it is now, it is really bad toward them. So I'm asking you guys why. And I, to be honest, I respect your opinions. Like, I'm not afraid to sit here and tell you, I don't think they've been especially bad this season. I don't think that there's much fear inside of me that Bayern Munich could go on and win with these two as midfielders moving forward. I think they could still work together. And maybe I'm wrong about it. And maybe all the people that are pointing out all the deficiencies in their respective games are right. I'm not going to sit here and take a stance and say that you guys are all wrong. But I would just like to know, like, what are you seeing? What are you feeling? And why is it so strong toward those two players? Is it just about the play on the pitch? Or is it because of this overarching theme that these two were supposed to be the next generation leaders, and they just have not gotten to that level yet to where they can carry this team, where they still need the support of Neuer and Thomas Müller and a newcomer like Harry Kane to take the team to the next level? So I don't know. I would really like to hear from you guys in the comments or on social media. And I just want to know, I want to pick your brain on it. And I respect it. Like, I'm not going to tell you you're wrong on anything, because like I said, everybody's going to have an opinion on all of this. I've certainly have strong opinions on some players. I've had very strong opinions on some players in the past where, I mean, I could go back and I look at the whole Mikael Cuisance signing back from Gladbach. And I remember, I think it was even before we even had a bigger platform with this podcast, but talking about it, it's like, this doesn't even make sense. Like, why are you bringing this kid into the mix now? And then, of course, as we followed Cuisance over the course of his career, we learn that he was immature, that he wasn't quite ready for what was ahead of him, and that he was no way ever going to be a part of a Bayern Munich team that was going to do anything of significance. Like, he was not going to be a key player for any good team. He just didn't have that mental makeup at the time. So I go back to that. I go back to, you know, some of the things we've talked about in recent history with some of the players, whether you're talking about Davies hitting a wall with his progression or Zane falling off a cliff. It's okay to criticize players. It's okay to have opinions that they're not playing well. I respect it. I totally get it. And I will have those opinions. But for me personally, just this year, of all the things that are wrong, that have been wrong with Bayern Munich, Kimmich and Goretzka, to me, they're in the mix for sure, but they're not at the top of the list. I mean, for me, I still have Tuchel and how he's handled everything since the day he took over as the biggest problem. And in my mind, if it's not Tuchel that got the call there, and if it's someone else, this entire season and the end of last season could have played out completely different. And I still believe that has more to do with the coach than it does two players like Kimmich and Goretzka. But either way, let me know how you feel about those two. Why do you think there's so much hate? And if you are one of the people that are not a fan of either one of those two guys, tell us why. I really do want to hear it and want to understand it. We're going to take one more break, and then we'll be right back. We're going to break down something on the lighter side, another hilarious episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. I know it's been a crazy week, but I did want to just briefly touch on Curb last weekend's episode. A tremendous episode in my mind. Now, listen, I rated it a 4.25 out of 5, and I know I'm saying tremendous. It was really good. A lot of really funny moments. The only reason I knocked it down to a 4.25 is that I thought that, you know, some of the subject matter is, you know, I feel like while Larry's still on point with his humor, some of the subjects he's used in recent episodes are kind of old. So things that I really liked about this. Now, it all was predicated around one of the guys from the golf club, Stu, who had a stroke, and they weren't sure if he was going to make it. And he wanted to leave Larry, I guess, not custody of his daughter, but have Larry be an important part of his daughter's life. And then leave Freddie Funkhauser a cherished violin. Of course, this all starts out with Larry getting a phone call, which he didn't really want because he didn't really care about Stu and his stroke. So it's just funny how the episode started with essentially a call from Stu's wife to Larry and evolved to a text chain, which was the main theme of the episode. And then this decision between Larry and Freddie about who would really be the person who would steward over Stu's daughter if Stu were to pass away. Just some really uproarious laugh out loud moments. Larry was as belligerent in this episode as any other point that we've seen. The argument that he got into with, I think it was Stu's either brother-in-law or his cousin Waylon, about the text chain. I mean, that was just classic Curb stuff. I was dying during that whole exchange. Just great stuff. There was a lot of different themes. And as we talk about with Curb, it's how Larry ties them all together that makes Curb so good. We had Larry's whole relationship with the artist, how he was caught in the act by his housekeeper, how that all evolved. You had the whole daughter versus violin with Freddie Funkhauser. You had the Larry coming up with the dream excuse to get Jeff out of having to go to Raleigh with Susie for a convention. all of those storylines, again, they came together so magnificently at the end of the episode and they tied together. I can't even dive into Larry and the Artist just because trying to keep this podcast PC, but if you saw the episode, you know exactly what I mean, and how the housekeeper finally got her revenge on the whole situation was, it was pretty hilarious. So really good episode of Curb. I always judge Curb by how funny it is from start to finish, how many times I laughed, and how all of those storylines intertwine at the end. And I think, you know, Larry has been on point for the most part this season. A couple of down episodes, but for the majority of the season, it's been really, really good. And as I told you before, I was at some point we'll watch that Rick and Michonne show, and I have not gotten the time yet to do that. Just have had a lot going on. I know a lot of you are recommending Shogun, so that's something I am going to put on my list to see if I can weave into the mix here. I'm starting to run out of time though, because I know when this summer hits, not only will I be wrapped up in obviously everything that's going on with Bayern Munich and the German national team, but I will have baseball every night, so I will be watching a lot of that. But we'll also have The Boys. We'll also have House of the Dragon. There will be a lot going on viewing wise. So I'll have to try and squeeze in what I can soon enough, or else I'll just never get to it. So we'll definitely give some thoughts if I get to watch Shogun, and if I get to squeeze in that Rick and Michonne, The Walking Dead series type show. So we'll see what happens with that. Just want to say thanks again for listening. We appreciate everything that you guys do, whether it's checking out BavarianFootballWorks.com or downloading this podcast. It means a lot to us as we try and really grow the podcast and get it out to a broader audience. So much appreciated. As always, you can get me at the Barrel Blog on Twitter. You can get the site at BavarianFBWorks. You can get our tweetmeister, Tom Adams, at TommyAdams71. You can get I Need No Name at BFWIN. And then you can get Siler at BFWSiler. Get all of your Bayern Munich and German national team coverage at BavarianFootballWorks.com. We are working on a solution for the games, the national team games for Germany. Don't know what that is yet. Hopefully we can work something out. Honestly, they are not making it easy on anyone to watch these games. So if you have a solution, or if you know where this game is going to be broadcasted, let us know, because we are actively working on it. But right now it seems as if our overseas crew might be the only people who are able to watch it, because in the United States, there's just no good option. So appreciate you guys listening. Have a couple of beers on me. We'll see you next time.